I isolate cohorts of animals. So I'll take a year's worth, for instance, of gilts coming in, replacement gilts coming in for a year, and I'll lock them in together, and I will follow them as the data that I want to analyze. So I will follow them in from the first one in to the last one out. So in most farms, you're looking at two and a half years, sometimes 3 years worth of data. But it's a herd within the herd. There's nothing coming in, nothing going out other than what we started with. And that gives us such a clear picture of what's happening parity by parity. It's the parity analysis that gives us sow retention, very accurate sow retention. And if you start with parity zero, so the gilts that have been prepared and brought in, you're then looking at a parity spread on some farms, 0 to 10.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Summer challenges finish your pig performance. Digestrum Finish can help. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions.
All right. Hello, and welcome to the SwineNet podcast show. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today, and I'd like to introduce you to my returning guest, Stephen Hall. Stephen is the owner of Stephen Hall Management, Quill, and Pig Limited. He's a production strategist and an international data analyst and writer. He has a great blog post if you want to check some of those out. I've checked them out in the past. And Stephen has been my guest a couple of times where we've discussed his philosophy on Guilt Watch together. Also, the three E's, his ethical platform, I want to call it. And then today we're going to talk about the one pig life cycle or linear productivity analysis and how that works with looking at a sow herd and kind of a little bit zeroing in on the productivity of an individual sow group. But before we get started, I want Stephen to introduce himself a little bit more. And in case you haven't catched one of our previous podcasts, that way you know who he is. So take it away, Stephen.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be back and to see you again. And thank you for the privilege. It really is a privilege to be able to spend time doing this. Yeah, I've continued the work that we talked about in the previous two podcasts. My background has been sow production for the last 56 years. I never intended to retire. I wanted to keep going till I've gone. I'm sure I've said that before. And I am still going, creaking a little bit, but still going. It's such an exciting industry to be in when it's been your passion all your life. And there is now another generation coming in, and I want to be a part of any encouragement we can give them. The culture of the industry is changing all the time, and there's lots of exciting things happening in science and all the other disciplines. I would love to be in that younger generation with all that I can see is going to lead us into as an industry. But I'm clinging on by my fingertips, hoping to make a contribution or a little bit more of a contribution before that time comes when I go to the pig farm in the sky. So, that's where I'm at. And I'd like to extend the conversation that we've had in the past. I've kept working since I last saw you and working on ideas and analysis. I'm also working with a group in which I think I mentioned last time in America. We're a startup, Hale Ag, Intelligent Farming, two scientists, and the other guy, Paul, drives the marketing side of it. But we are collaborating. It's always been the principle, and we're working with several different people now on some very, I would say, very exciting ideas and projects that are coming to fruition. And I won't to spill the beans on those, but it's these guys have kept me going and kept me moving forward and asking all sorts of questions. And my contribution is the pig production. Theirs is the science, the entrepreneurship that they have and the business acumen. Mine is just, an old pigman who's got some memories that he likes to share. But that's it really. That's where we're at.
Well, I think 56 years working in the industry is a long time. And so we need to listen to wise advisors like yourself.
That's very kind.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So, Stephen, we've talked about the, you know, your philosophy, the 3E principle of economics, right? Ethics, environmental efficiency, and responsibility. And now we're going to kind of dig in a little bit and talk about the 3E one pig life cycle and or the linear productivity analysis. And so tell us what that is. And maybe, you know, it sounds very philosophical, but, you know, we're all used to In the sow farms, at least most of the sow farms in the U.S. are the continuous flow dynamic, right? You've got, 20 groups going through your sow herd and, they're kind of, we look at those reproductive reports the same. This looks at them a little bit different way is my understanding. So walk us through that.
Yeah, what it is I isolate cohorts of animals. So I'll take a year's worth, for instance, of gilts coming in, replacement gilts coming in for a year, and I'll lock them in together. And I will follow them as the data that I want to analyze. So I will follow them in from the first one in to the last one out. So in most farms, you're looking at two and a half years, sometimes 3 years worth of data. But it's a herd within the herd. There's nothing coming in, nothing going out other than what we started with. And that gives us such a clear picture of what's happening parity by parity. It's the parity analysis that gives us sow retention, very accurate sow retention. And if you start with parity zero, so the gilts that have been prepared and brought in, you're then looking at a parity spread on some farms, 0 to 10. The best farms, we're looking at 0 to 6. Where before, but these are people who have been working on their sow retention, getting it down. So one pig means this. It means that I follow the aggregate one pig through the 10 parities. And I can report quite a lot of detail that you would look at normally in a continuous flow analysis. I'm looking at the same KPIs, but then I'm extending those KPIs. I mean, sow retention is the first extension of data metrics, really. There's nobody reporting sow retention in that way. And it is a very accurate way of reporting it. But then you look at a column of data in parity one, you're looking at everything you would normally look at, but then they're extending again the metrics to look at the economics of that and to report the share of income or otherwise, which in parity one and to in quite a lot of herds, parity two is a negative. And in parity one, it's a very large negative, and they're also the largest percentage of the herd population across the parities. So you're bearing that in mind. So you want to reduce as much as possible the loss of animals in that first parity. So you're setting yourself up to carry through into productivity and into profit, hopefully, more of those animals. It means you're having to replace less as well, obviously. So it works economically both ways. You make more money in one way and you save it in another way as well. So following those 10 parities, you know, anything from 6 to 10 through, you're looking at the progress and you watch the retention obviously going down. My target is 85% at parity five. It's like climbing Everest for a lot of producers, but you know, why not climb Everest? It's possible. And the significant difference is huge. If you look at a herd that's got a 50% sow retention at parity five and a herd that's doing, you know, 85%, you've got a 60% increase in income, you know, at the end of the day, net income. And so that's worth going for, worth working for, because everything that you save into those later parities is paying you back handsomely compared with all of those that you lose early on. So it's a really good discipline to begin to work at. But then what it does is it informs husbandry. I think there was a lady that was the CEO of IBM many years ago, And she had this lovely phrase, which was data into information into insight. And I stick with that. That's what I want to achieve wherever, so that we're delivering all the benefits of the science, of the genetic excellence we have in our industry, the great nutritional understanding, the veterinary medicine, support. We want to turn that into that data into information, and then we want to sit with people who understand that and what it's telling us to turn that into insight on the farm. So it's a big push towards better collaboration. I'll perhaps come to that a little while later, but it's what my heart's desire in the years I have left in this industry is to see the skills that have become so fragmented by the specialisms that have become even tighter. I'd like to see people sitting around the desk in an office, the geneticist, the nutritionist, the vet, the team who are the husbandry team on the farm. I want that relationship to grow. And I do believe that we are reaching a point, dare I say it, where, we're in a post-marketing era. The products are proven. I mean, genetics have delivered. They've certainly delivered two things in the last 60 years, but they've been working on other things that will come as we progress. So they've delivered numbers born phenomenally, as an amazing achievement. And there can't be many herds in the world today buying genetics from the main genetic companies that don't have the potential to achieve larger litters. I think that potential has probably been taken too far, so we need to address that issue. And I know they are. They're looking at that. They're looking at what advice they can give. And all the rest of it. And that comes, they can give better advice if they've got better access to what's happening on the farm. And for me, that's what life cycle analysis does. Put that in the hands of the genetic companies or the nutritional companies, and they've got so much more understanding almost straight away because they have the ability to interpret it. So taking that one pig, I then also have it for the feeding herd. And I know that we have technologies today that can retain individual weaned pigs with their genetic connection to their mother. So we know what parity each pig has come from. And I believe there are things within that that we will discover, again, maybe not in my lifetime, but I do believe we will continue to go deeper and deeper in our understanding. And we will find that a parity one pig in the feeding herd will perform very differently to a parity three pig or a parity five sourced pig. So that's all to come. But life cycle analysis is in my hope, is it will drive our direction that way, and that we will get together. We will be able to produce technology that's cost effective and able to deliver this kind of level of data to give us the information to increase the insight all the time down on the farm. So there's a lot of misalignment at the moment in our industry on lots of levels, and it's really working hard to bring that, bring those things into alignment that benefits everybody, really, but especially the hardworking farmers who are the ones that are really up against it most of the time. So I don't know whether that's clear as mud, but that's where it's at. And I think for me, then what that's done is the linear productivity analysis looks at the level of productivity in the one pig. So it moves along. So obviously that increases as we move through, or decreases the loss of productivity as we move through the sow retention to the end. And what it opened up straight away, really, because one of the driving principles of 3Es is return on investment of resource. So every gill is a resource. The feed that we bring in is a resource. Labor is a resource. Our technology is a resource. Veterinary medicine is a resource. And I want to look at them as individuals. We've always had one conversion ratio in our industry, which is a feed conversion ratio. And what this has done, the linear productivity analysis, has opened up the possibility, and I'm doing it. I'm actually making these calculations. I have started with genetics. So I use sow retention to produce an input-output ratio result for the parities as we move through. So I've got a sheet in front of me with a before and after, actually, and I'll read the after if I can. I'll just find it here. Yeah. So you're looking at parity 0 through to 6 here, and this is already an improvement because the before was 7 parities. So we've already reduced down and reduced considerably and tightened the number of animals in each. But it's interesting. So I'm looking at the first column is 0 to 6, and the ratio is the number of animals, the percentage of animals of the total that came in that have produced the percentage of weaners for that parity of the in total production. So in 0, we've got 9% of the animals didn't produce a litter. So the ratio there is 9 to 0. And it's a percentage. So not, sorry, it's not 9 animals. It's what animals didn't produce were 9% of the total coming in. In parity 1, 91% produced, and the ratio is 91% of the animals produced 23% of the total pigs weaned for that cohort. And then we move through. 2, it's 82 to 21. 3, it's 72% to 20%. 4, it's 61 to 18. 5, 52 to 15. And 6 is 13 to 4. That's born alive. If you move across, it's very similar, except that the percentage weaned moves around a little bit. So you can see some cross-fostering, some less weaned off the older parities and supplementing the younger parities and perhaps some smaller litters there. So you've got that. And what the right-hand figure, the ratio 2, the output also gives you, almost by accident in a way, is it gives you the parity share breakdown of the herd, of that cohort, how many pigs ended up in each, in production in each of those parities. So it's really interesting to look at these things. And that's what I mean by data into information, into insight. And then you can start to look at, well, shouldn't we have had more here, or shouldn't we have done this here? Shouldn't we have done that there? And that input is really, really helpful. It's important to be able to do that, not just with genetics, but with feed and with healthcare, labor, husband. Then you can begin to really hone in on what I would call precision, the economy of precision, basically. You talked about the US and, you know, the continuous flow and big, big businesses. They're all operating economy of scale, and it's a dead end. They're not going to improve anywhere near as much as they're capable of with the resources they're bringing in. They are not going to get the best out of those resources by operating economy of scale. They need this kind of data, this kind of information, to begin to understand how they turn it from economy of scale to economy of precision, which is an open road to much greater economic success, ethical standards, and environmental sustainability. These are the three E's, and that's what this gives you. It gives you access to understanding what's happening in each of these.
You've done this work with some farms, and tell me about the action. So from the insight, right, you said, you know, you have data, and then, you know, you have insight to the data, and then you talk about it and you're looking at your herd in a different way. So what about the action? What have some producers done to improve this, to improve the ratios? So is it concentrating on gilt development, so those gilts are in better shape legs-wise or productivity-wise, and so then they last longer? Or is it working on, you know, maybe animal handling, if you have sow lameness or a disease process, right? Tell me some things, you know, some action items that maybe a success story that you've had.
That's a really good question. It is the gilt. It certainly is the gilt, and I think it begins, you know, it begins when you mate the GP, really. You know what genetics you're hoping to get out of it, but it starts with that process. It starts with the development in that animal. So it's the parent gilt that's being developed inside the GP, if you like. So it's understanding that process and understanding anything that we can do from outside the bonnet, if you like. What can we do under the bonnet that we don't yet understand? So the science is, I know the genetic companies are looking at those kind of things, but if we can if we can get on that guilt as early as possible, you know, as soon as that embryo starts to develop, then we need to be able to do everything we can to develop that properly. So that's a do, you know, we get in there, we do that. We have the litter born. I've had this discussion with a very good friend of mine, and a man I love dearly, a geneticist and well-known in the industry. And we had this conversation when I was a youngster. I learned from, you know, the previous generations of stockmen that you always picked gilts you wanted to breed, commercially. You picked gilts from litters that were predominantly gilts at birth because there was a sort of female influence within the uterus. So far, I haven't been able to uncover any scientific proof of that. And my good friend has assured me he hasn't been able to find any either. But it just, you know, it was just one of those things, I suppose. But you're thinking about everything. What can we do? What's going to influence this animal? I think the don'ts are you don't then birth that animal, take it through, wean it, and then stick it in with the feeding herd and take it through in the feeding herd and, you know, select the best out at 30 kilos, but they're still in the feeding herd or they're still getting the same feed as the feeding herd. You take her out from the start. I think that is a big, big and a very important issue. And the bigger the business, the easier that is to justify, if you like, in terms of the scale, in terms of using buildings slightly differently. But we need to slow her down. That's a definite. She needs to be slowed down. I've seen over the years of my own experience, hundreds of delivery sheets for breeding gilts, F1s, coming onto farms, all in their birth week. So you might see them 3 birth weeks apart and you think, oh, that's good. They're a nice tight group. But then you look at their average daily live weight gain. Some are down at 450, some are up at nearly 800. You know, that's a massive difference between those two animals in their development. They might even look alike. They aren't going to be the same size, but they might look alike. But there's a lot in between those two extremes. There's a lot of differences under the bonnet in those animals. One may have had too much of something that they didn't need, and another may not have had enough of something that they needed to turn them into an animal with the potential for longevity. And I think that is really important to bear that in mind. So, yeah, start caring for the animals as individuals. Take them out of the main run of the herd and then keep them as tight as possible. I believe in restrict feeding them personally to make sure you've got the process under control. If you're just throwing, you know, food at them to appetite, then I think you haven't got the control that you want to have to develop this animal. And I think that's really important. I think for anyone who can select their own gilts, and increasingly people, the bigger herds, you know, have got their own gilt development units, et cetera, you're looking to select, and particularly if you're looking, you know, if you're also selecting your own GPs within that setup, so you've shut the doors and the semen's coming in, and then you start to pick your own pig. And I did this. I was the UK boar production manager in the UK for a while in the 90s. And I may have said this before in this conversation, but to try and cut to the chase, we weren't doing a very good job in sending repeat orders. In other words, we'd send a wonderfully looking boar first time around, next time, the next one didn't look anything like the last one. And of course, that creates incredible doubt in the farmer straight away. I inherited a replacement rate of nearly 15%. We got it down to about 3 simply by going out and asking the farmer not to draw a picture of what he wanted, but to answer the questions that would give us the picture of what he expected. I think we should do that with our gilts. And I think individual farms will pick a gilt that fits their system. And can survive in their system and do well in their system. Not a range of gilts, some of which do really well and some we always know aren't going to do so good. If you've got that level of control, if you're running a GP herd that's producing your parents and you're also replacing your GPs, over a period of time, you can get peas out of a pod physically. And because you're getting to know those animals, you're also picking them for all the other things that you know you want to work well. And I think that's the future. That's why I think in one sense we're post-marketing. You know, I think farmers they've been doing this long enough to start thinking about process control of everything they do. So they don't need anything marketing to them. They just need the people who represent the companies that are supplying them to come in, sit down with them, and go through that data information into insight for everybody in the team, because it works the other way. I'm sure that people working in the breeding companies would love to have more information back from the farms and help them to understand what the needs are, because the genetic companies have needs. They need to know what this farmer really expects. And I think that's a two-way street. So I think life cycle analysis really helps that with the level of metrics that we can extend existing data to already. It's not, we haven't got to wait to record this stuff. You know, I can go back as far as you like. I've got two sets of data at the moment, 20 years worth, looking at sow retention and everything else over 20 years, group by group by group. And the one thing that does that on the graph is numbers born alive and numbers weaned. Everything else flatlines. Now, that's not good, because farrowing rate is flatlining, you know, and things like standard deviation in born alive doesn't improve. That's another very good metric that we should have for every one of the key performance indicators. Every one of them should have a standard deviation so that we can see how much we can close that down. And that's where we should be at today, really.
Yeah, no, very good. So expand just a little bit on what's the misalignment between available science and technology and then the commercial need? How do we get to where you want us to be?
Well, I had a thought the other day, and I wrote this down, and it's horizons that double as frontiers in their purpose are destinations at which no traveler actually arrives. So we're aligning even as we're changing. So it's a massive challenge to align. So we have to work very closely. And my answer to that really, and I've already alluded to it a little bit, but then I jotted it down so I didn't waste your time. But for professional specialism has fractured and fragmented. The complex disciplines that derive the excellent standards of scientific discovery. This results in deepening perceptions of a hierarchy that is preventing the realization of that data into information into insight chain that reaches to operational husbandry teams on farm. It's where we begin with that is a sense of equality in the contributions we can all make, you know, the representatives of all of the supply companies and their clients. There needs to be a sense of equality that we all have a contribution to make. And as said a moment ago, the needs, understanding each other's needs is a really good crossover of communication and very productive. We should sit in the farm office and discuss the reality of our needs, each one. We should take time to share it. And then we can make, you know, we can make it work for one another, to be honest with you. The relationship between science and farming, as I've already said, I think is entering a post-marketing era. You know, we don't need marketing. The science is good. We're just not linking up with it. So the alignment comes through the people who are supplying and the people who are being supplied to. I wrote this down. People might not like this, but in the individual relationship between the supplier of genetics, feed, veterinary support, etc., the supplier is guaranteed a profit from the transaction. The individual client, the farmer, isn't, such as the nature of pig production as a commodity industry. You know, I sold genetics. I was a pig breeding stock salesman in my 40s. You always guaranteed a profit because that was set up on the animal, but it didn't guarantee the farmer a profit. And as time has gone by, that has nipped up and nipped up and nipped up. We need to remember that and work together, you know, and to turn that investment into a profit for the farmer. That, you know, you make your profit, but are you really working with that farmer to turn what they've bought for you into a profitable investment? That return on investment of resource is becoming a key factor in 3E without any doubt. Everything needs to be looked at precisely and make sure that that's what we're achieving. And life cycle analysis enables us to do that, really.
No, I think that's we don't think about the individual, the farmer, right, and his return on investment, right? And absolutely everything comes with a cost. And I think the supplier will do better at supplying a better product or a better service if they have more insight, like you said, to what the farmer wants. And so that communication is really important. Absolutely, working as a team.
Yeah, and I think that that is important. I'm going to name drop here, but I've known Craig Lewis at PIC for a number of years. I never worked with him because I'd left the company long before he came along. But he's been very gracious in working with me, and any questions I've got, I'm not asking because I'm trying to sell PIC livestock. I'm working with somebody who's prepared to collaborate and talk about stuff, and he never tries to sell me anything. He'll probably get the sack now. He's one, a very good example of somebody who will collaborate and shares a passion and interest. And the producer is number one in his drive to improve things. And we need lots more Craigs really in the industry on the supply side. People genuinely, caught up in the difficulties and the challenges that their clients face. And I think that's really important, because we have to remember we sell to a farmer who then employs a lot of other people in order, to make the profit to pay them and give them a lifestyle, if you like. As I was just one salesman turning up with my lorry load of gilts or whatever, but this person had, lots of other responsibilities. So you want that to become a profitable enterprise, and that's important, really.
Well, we're rounding up our time here today, Stephen. If to our audience, if you enjoyed our SwineIt podcast, please comment. If you have a question, if you have a suggestion, you have a comment for Stephen or for our platform, send it out to us. If you liked our show, send us a thumbs up. I'm going to give Stephen a final opportunity to kind of wrap us up. Tell us maybe something we didn't touch on that you want to talk to our audience about our linear productivity analysis, or really anything that we talked about.
Okay. I think for me, one thing that is really important in, there's another put in the input and output. And I would like to just raise this throughput. And though I'm looking at input output, it's the chief financial officers of all of these big companies that are driving throughput. And they're driving it as an element of the economy of scale, and I understand that. But I think that there is it's an ill economy of scale, and it can drive two things really. It can drive industrialized welfare regulation, so you get the minimum space to get the throughput, but it's still within regulation. But is that actually impacting the regulations in the first place? And it promotes the sustainability of disease risk. I think if we think about that, if we just pushing everything through in order to create the profit from economy of scale, instead of slowing down and making our individual pigs potentially more profitable by the way in which we look after them, then I think that is really important, and we should be thinking about that. And the other thing I touched on earlier, the difference in parities within the feeding herd, the source parity for the feeding herd pig, I do find that very exciting. But I also find the whole business of longevity and sow retention exciting, because I was thinking of this the other day in feeding. When you're feeding in gestation for parities one and two, you're feeding the animal as you are in all the others, but you're feeding parities one and two because they're still growing. You're feeding parities three, four, five, and six because they're growing, a pregnancy within them. So parities one and two, we need to think about the levels of feed in that. And that should connect back to the fact that we slowed them down, we restrict fed them to get them to the point. Don't then just let it go and start giving everything 2.5 kilos in the dry period. Think about that, and think about that in the older sow. And then, of course, you start to feed the litter around day 80, 85, and again, to think about that in more detail. I think we should make our aim, however we perceive body condition score. A sow in lactation should not lose any more than a half to a point in body condition score, and that should be another thing that we're focusing on within the farrowing shed. So there are a couple of thoughts there, really.
Yeah, I appreciate those. And I think it's important, a really important message that we just heard from you is, you know, throughput isn't everything. If you really take care of the animal and you prepare her and you prepare your whole system at the beginning, at the guilt side, you know, she'll support you in the end with good productivity. But if you, you know, if you don't give her enough space, if you don't give her enough of the diet she needs, slow her down, make sure she has good feet and legs, a good environment, she's not going to last in the herd. So putting effort there is important. And I appreciate the comment on, you know, the welfare of the animal is of utmost importance, right? Even as we're thinking about profitability, I think that's something sometimes we've forgotten.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
It's time for our famous three.
Tired of solving swine nutrition challenges alone? The Swine Nutrition Inner Circle connects swine nutritionists who share real insights on formulation, ingredient variability, and diet adjustments. When you need clarity, experts are just a conversation away. Join at swinenutritioninnercircle.com and connect with peers who understand the work you do every day.
Well, thank you so much, Stephen, for being my guest. But before I let you go, the hallmark of our show is to ask our guest some final thoughts and questions. So I have the three questions as the hallmark for you.
Yes.
So the first one is your favorite book or resource in your area of expertise.
Okay. Well, I read quite a lot. I actually wrote three down cheekily. Well, I take the one I'm reading at the moment for the sake of time, and it's Food Fight by Richard J. Sexton, and it's everybody should read it. It's a superb book. It really does open up the future, understanding what's happening in the industry, understanding where agriculture is going, understanding the impact on productivity of all these wonderful ideologies we're up against at the moment, organic, regenerative, all of this, all of them are going to reduce productivity. And therefore, we're going to have to reclaim more land and all the rest of it. So, and why I like the book is there is a very strong reference to evidence. It's very well referenced, this book. So everything that's stated in it comes from, you know, research that's been peer reviewed and everything. So, and it really does make you think, actually. It makes you stop you and you just think, really, and that's very important. The only other thing I would say, I have read This Is For Everyone by Sir Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web. And that was the biggest industrial process in the shortest possible time in history, as far as I can see. It's certainly been the biggest industrial revolution. And just to understand how quickly things are accelerating, that's a read that helps you get your bearings around AI and everything else, really. So, yeah, still keep reading. I've got to. I didn't do very well at school, so I'm catching up.
Yeah, absolutely. I have heard of the first book that you mentioned. So I think that's a good one to check out. So how about a resource outside of agriculture, something else?
Well, I think, you know, I have a faith, and so I start my day with a thought. So I'm still reading and have done for many years a book called My Utmost for His Highest, Oswald Chambers. And there's some real wisdom for life in there, real wisdom and how to deal with the challenges of life. And I think there's a song that we sing in our church, which, and the two lines that really strike me is that the I am in the storm, but the storm is not in me. And I think for anybody working in this industry, and I'm not preaching here, I'm not trying to convert anybody, I just think that very thought that I can be in the storm, but the storm is not in me, that comes from even the work I do in my life cycle analysis. If I can turn data into information, into insight, that means they can stand in the storm, but they can stand there with a peace, knowing what they've got to do. You ask the question, how do we prepare a gilt? That's a long road. They're not going to suddenly start churning out brilliant longevity gilts next week. But if they've got that insight, they can begin that journey. And I think that having the storm on the outside means that you can find the fair weather further down the road. If you've got the peace on the inside, that you understand the insight and can go with that and trust it, then, you know, that would be something I would say. And I think aspire to have a vision is my advice to anybody. Aspire to have a vision because it works as a beacon in the challenges of life. Doesn't matter what it is. If it's a hopeful vision, then it will light your way. And you know, the challenges can come. But if you hold on to that vision, there'll be a light in that vision that keeps you moving forwards. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, great advice. So, Stephen, last one, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
Unrelenting curiosity that, you know, that just will not take no for an answer.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. You're not the first person that said that. And I also tend to agree that it's important. Ask questions, right? Learn more. And if you're a new student or a young person and you don't know the industry, just keep asking questions. That's how you learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. And don't be afraid. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that's a cliche, but it's actually true. I can tell you that.
Yeah, me too. I've asked my fair share of what I think now as stupid questions, but you know, I was curious, or I needed to learn.
Yeah, so. That's it, isn't it, really? Passion, that's the key, yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for being my guest again. Check out our previous podcasts, you out there in the audience, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much. It's been a real privilege, Tara. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.